eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome back to the Eat, Drink, Talk podcast. I'm your host, Steve Coombs, and my co-host is Rick Redding. How are you, brother?
Doing great. Eating a lot of good food and drinking a lot of good drinks.
It has been a month for... Well, we started a new month. July was crazy. I did not meet my goal of losing any weight this month. I just did not maintain very well.
I went the other way.
Went up? Yeah. It didn't help when we went to Hopcat Friday night with our lovely significant others.
Yes. The food was outstanding. The beers were cold and yummy.
You did like the food. I think Leslie and Paula and I did not.
Yeah, I saw that she left her macaroni and cheese, a lot of it.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Just not memorable, but I mean, nothing
she
wrong
said
with
there
it.
Was a lot, Paula said there was a lot of flavor to the pizza that she had.
Detroit-style pizza.
Detroit-style pizza.
She grew up with.
I think her favorite's still out at Louie Louie's. But, I had these fish tacos were really, it's become one of my favorite dishes. I've tried a couple of places, the grilled.
It was loud and lively, wasn't it?
It was loud.
There's a lot of people there.
When you walk out of a concert, it's really loud, and you're still talking loud when you leave because your ears are ringing.
Stop yelling at me, honey. Stop. Yeah, it was. They played the owner is a big music fan, and he deliberately plays music a little bit loud. I didn't think it was terrible. Silver Dollar, used to just make my ears ring. I don't know if it still does that, but. It's going to be a place, I think, where millennials gather. The beer was excellent. The beer list is fantastic. It's a beautiful place, beautiful art.
I'll certainly go back, and certainly it's on my list of places to look at when with special events, because some of those private rooms are really, really cool. And
right.
They didn't have the patio quite finished, and, I want to go out there. And
it was raining, I think it was, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. There's a beautiful patio it's a second story, and it overlooks Bar Sound Road. I can't imagine how much stuff's going to get thrown off that.
Yeah, I know it. And another thing that is unique about that place, and I did this. You walked over there, of course, but I did, it's well worth $5 to do the valet there. And I did that, and I came out, and my car was like...
Yeah, it's right by
there.
The door.
Right by the door.
Mr. VIP.
That was really important.
Absolutely.
But, a lot of people will drive around, and because I know, because I'm guilty of this, I drive around two or three blocks just to find a place to park for free. Just pull in there, pay the $5, and go in.
Yeah, well, it certainly makes life easy, that's for sure. So, speaking of making life easy, looks like Wild Turkey has chosen Matthew McConaughey to be its creative director for this new upcoming campaign, and that I would think that makes life a little bit easier to have a good looking actor, a cool dude, and just somebody that gives new life to this. Well, not that it doesn't have life, but a different perspective to this historic brand. I mean, what do you think about this guy coming aboard?
I mean, he's a cool spokesman. I mean, he got a lot of attention for those Lincoln ads, and some of it wasn't all that positive because they were so sort of out there, But I think it's great. It's certainly going to draw attention to the brand, and he's not just a spokesman. He's involved.
I was convinced. Yeah, go to eatdrinktalk.net and see my commentary on it, and you will notice in particular that there's a two-minute film. Mm-hmm. There and he just really he's convincing. Let's say that at the very least.
He's a good actor.
Yeah. So I got a hook, line, and sinker, and it will be a different young guy there, kind of juxtaposed to the older Jimmy Russell, the brilliant master distiller there, and his son Eddie Russell, who's maybe 54, 55. And the trio seems to work really well. So I'm kind of excited for him. I like the kicking chicken.
It's good stuff, and I think there's a bigger story there in terms of marketing bourbon. There's so much now that it's going to be competitive, and celebrity spokesman, like Jim Beam had Mila Kunis.
Mm-hmm.
And using sex appeal and all that. But it'd be fun to speculate on what brands are going to get celebrities to endorse them.
Right. And unlike Mila Kunis, he was dressed kind of casually. He was in a big, thick, kind of a brawny, those heavy flannel shirts and jeans.
Yeah, it looks like he's out on the farm.
Exactly, which I think is part of the carefully crafted image, but nonetheless, I like it. And it definitely does make me more interested in what's going on in Lawrenceburg, the great distillery. So a little bit harder news. You and I were talking earlier about Texas Roadhouse's recent earnings report, which were good for the company. It was profitable, but analysts, they sold some shares because they didn't meet their expectations.
Right, and you're saying, and your contention, like we talked about last week, is that a coming recession may be headed for not the entire U.S. economy, but the restaurant economy, based on, in part, on a glut or an overbuilding of restaurants.
Too many seats, not enough butts. That's what they keep saying. And Texas Roadhouse's comparable store sales have been on a roll for 6.5 years. They have not had a negative quarter, which is impressive. But this top-line sales slowdown, analysts are saying, is an indication that the whole industry is headed for a decline, which is really interesting when we have so many new places here, independent and chain. So I don't know. It makes me uneasy when I read that because there's probably a lot of truth in it.
Yeah, well, you know, if you really think about it, you know, we've talked about, a dozen restaurants just on this show opening, and unless there's that many more people going out to eat, they've got to take that business away from somebody
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely, you're exactly right. No, nobody is. It is not build them and they will come. I mean, right. It's build them and we got to go get them from somebody else. That's exactly what's happening. You know, and the little side note to that is the same analysts that said a restaurant recession would affect fine dining and casual dining would push customers toward pizza. Because if there's any softening in sales at other places, it tends to fall in the hands of pizza operators. So people maybe just get lazy and want to stay home and have delivery. Football season is coming, which is well, and this will be you too. You and your sons are big sports fans. How much more will you start ordering pizza when football season comes?
Oh yeah, it's a lot. And I tell you, the oncoming. I haven't yet been over to the new Mod Pizza in Hikes Point, but. Mod and Blaze and what's the other one? Pieology. Those style of restaurants where you can walk in like Subway and order your stuff. You know, I want the tomatoes and the mushrooms and the sausage. And they put it in there right for you. It's like fast food almost.
It's fast casual is what they like to call it. And those formulas work.
Yeah.
Absolutely work.
They seem to have it down. Every one of those I've been into, they have so many. They seem to have so many employees standing around. But I guess that's what it takes to
training, for sure, too. Yeah, and the turnover is really bad right now in this town at the chain restaurant level. So, yeah, you're seeing a lot of training going on, too. I do not envy those guys right now. You know, we love this part of the show because we get to talk about our indulgences. And Rick had a surprising – knowing Rick's dietary habits like I do, I was surprised that he is so smitten with vegan jerky. Do tell.
Yeah. Well, I may not be smitten enough with like that I'm going to eat bagfuls of the stuff. But I do love a good business story. And the story that Stanley Chase told me about the growth of this vegan chicken – Louisville vegan jerky. It's just a fascinating story. He's a very smart businessman. He's very young. He told me so many funny little stories like about the jerky's appeal outside of Louisville, and it's bringing attention to Louisville because he told me this one thing. I'll tell you real quick because I don't think it's in the interview that you know the band Arcade Fire.
No, I don't.
They're from Canada. They're hip.
Canadians.
They're really cool. Well, they came to Louisville and played a show, and the first thing they did when they got here was find out about the jerky guy because they've been eating Louisville vegan jerky.
Wow, that's impressive.
And certainly called up and offered all the tickets they wanted if they just come over and bring a few bags.
No kidding.
It was really a good story. And the last thing I'll say about it is, you talk about a business growth. Stanley told me that 4 years ago he was cooking the jerky in a small kitchen at the Clifton Center and selling 100 bags a month. This last month, he sold 22,000.
Oh, wow.
So that's a lot.
In how many years?
in 4 years.
Wow.
From 2012, he was over there, and he's moved and grown and done it very methodically. And, well, I'll tell you one more thing that's cool about it is that they I'm a big fan, I don't know if you know this, of subscription services like the Dollar Shave Club. You know the Dollar Shave Club, Steve?
I know of it, but my beard really doesn't require any club.
Well,
I could probably shave at the club and get the same thing done.
Well, if you go to the grocery and buy your blades there, you know, you hate it because it's, you know, $8 for that.
Right.
So you can have blades delivered to your house once a month, and you never have to buy them at the store and pay those exorbitant prices. So it's a money-saving thing. It's a convenience thing. Well, they have a jerky of the month club.
Nice.
And you can have a box delivered to your home every month.
All the jerky, and you can. It's just not just like one box, right? I mean, you can have like multiples if you want.
Well, you can order whatever.
Order as much as you like.
But one thing is, you don't have to think about it. You know, without going to the store, you're going to have jerky in the house because it gets delivered every month, and you get something in the mail.
Astronaut food. So it looks like we're looking at it here in the office right now. We got some packages. So I had the anti jerky. I had my favorite eat this week was. At the sidebar, I had a burger with tobacco onions, jalapeno slices, a big scoop of chili, and pepper jack cheese. Oh. It was incredible. This is a sidebar at Whiskey Row. They just do a great job. I love the compact menu, the cocktail program. It is amazing for what basically is a burger restaurant.
Yeah.
It's just cool. It's right there next to the Yum Center.
It is a hip spot. I know. It's. I've been there several times. It's great.
And I also had the my favorite drink of the week there, too, was the Rejuvenator, which was, ooh. Oh, this is a gin drink. It's summertime, baby. So gin, basil, simple syrup, and lime juice. It was excellent. Just perfectly done. Again, find that at a burger joint. That's a rare find.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a great experience there. You wrote a piece on E-Drink Talk based in part on that experience, right?
Yes, it was. It's all about learning to manage your numbers, and those operators have done an excellent job with it. It's just go check it out. You can it's a big picture of a profit and loss key on a calculator, which I've never seen, but nevertheless the image makes the impact there. So your guest, Rick, this week is Stanley, as you talked about.
Well, yeah, right? I've already rambled on about Stanley, but it's one of the better interviews, I humbly say, that I've done on this show, and I would encourage anybody to listen to that.
Excellent. Well, I had the good fortune of interviewing for the second time. It's the first time we've had a second-time guest on Eat, Drink, Talk.
I went like a whole year before I did that. Yeah,
your guests don't open business, open them and close them left and right. So I had Larry Rice, who I had to stop by and check out The Pearl, which is the new bar in Germantown. It used to be Polly's Schnitzelberg Pub, and it's now The Pearl. And it's the ideal bar that Larry Rice and his girlfriend, Susie Hoyt, who is also his business partner, have always wanted. They just wanted just a basic kind of a dive bar, and it is that. I was in there, and the furniture is mismatched and stolen from – it looks like it's stolen from a school. I can't wait to go back. It was too early for me to actually have the experience when I did the interview today, but just, you know – it fits. It works. I know some people are going to say, oh, it's a hipster bar. You know, it's a caricature of a hipster bar. Whatever. It's a cool place to go, and I can't wait to go back.
Well, what a stretch over there in Germantown. They're having a renaissance of restaurants and bars over there, it seems like.
Absolutely. So that's in the past year. Well, it's the Germantown Craft House, just opened a couple of weeks ago, and Monic Brewing opened last year. And over the few years,
it's kind of helped the traditionals. It's like Four Pegs, because the other night when my son was in town, we headed to the Germantown Craft House. It was too crowded. We went over to Four Pegs, and there were plenty of people in there too.
Rising tide floats all ships.
There you go.
It's a good thing. Well, we're gonna get wind up the show here and let you folks go out and experience those great places. So we'll see you next week on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Shariot,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
My guest this week is Larry Rice, operating partner in the Silver Dollar in El Camino, and he's making his second appearance on Eat, Drink, Talk. Aren't you a fortunate kind of guy, right? Because he's opened up a new place along with a couple of business partners that everyone's talking about, and that is the Pearl in Germantown. Larry Rice, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, the Pearl opened July 31. Tell us a little bit just about its history, quick description, and how it's changed to what it is now.
Okay, so, yeah, we opened 2 days ago on Sunday. This was Polly's before, which was a neighborhood hole, watering hole that, you know, people played pool in. We are still definitely going for that neighborhood vibe. We live in the neighborhood, myself and Susie. She's the beverage director at our other places.
Susie Hoyt.
Yeah, and she's a partner here. And so it is our neighborhood bar for sure. And we're just trying, we wanted to open a place that was, like, most importantly to us was comfortable for people when they got here, that we were friendly to them when they got here, and they left feeling like they got a value. I think that's what really embodies a neighborhood bar. And so far, I feel like that's what people are getting when they come in. So,
is this, are you searching for any particular demographic? Is it young people, old people, anyone who wants to walk in?
Anybody who walks in, you know, and like, and hopefully, like a lot of folks who live in the neighborhood. It's the kind of bar that I kind of grew up around in my mind, you know. Like, this is the first time, actually, just for instance, I got my spurs working in Irish pubs. I worked in Irish pubs for a decade, first decade of my bar career. And this is the first bar I've ever opened that had Guinness on tap, because they'd never made sense anywhere else that I opened, you know. And I started the first tab and bought the first pint of Guinness here, you know. we're doing things. We didn't set a lot of rules. Like, you know, at our other places, we really curated the programs. Like, they're very specific for a reason, because we're going for a certain thing. You know, here it's more about, like, who's coming in. Like, we have Bud Light in a can if that's what people want. We've never sold that before, you know. We offer a lot of, you know, very, like, working man beers. I know that we kind of nod to that at the Dollar, but even more so here. We're just trying to have fun with it, and I think the place will grow with what people are asking for. What people are really enjoying will amplify. What people aren't getting into as much will drop, you know.
So where does it fit in comparison to some of your neighbors, like Monic, you know, the brewing company, Knock Bar, Four Pegs, all pretty serious beer places? This is just a step down from that in terms of maybe not so curated?
Well, no, we did curate the beer list for sure, but we're not trying to have the best beer list on the block, you know. I think Knock Bar kills that, you know, like, they do a great job of that. But what we do a little bit different, and we're it's a luxury that we can afford because of our well-trained bar staff at our other places, is and we didn't expect to do as many of them as we're doing in just 2 days, but is cocktails. Like, we don't have a cocktail list, because I think that the minute you hand someone a cocktail list at a neighborhood bar, they all of a sudden feel like they're in a cocktail bar, not a neighborhood bar. And then they maybe aren't as comfortable ordering a Budweiser and a shot of Wild Turkey, or ordering, or, you know, Bacardi and Coke or whatever, you know. And we want everybody to be comfortable ordering whatever they're used to having and whatever they like to have on a Tuesday when right before they go home and they get off work, you know. But we've sold a shitload of cocktails. We did put a little list up just to give people an idea of what they would cost, and they're all classics, though. You know, we have an Old Fashioned, a Manhattan, a Gimlet, and a Gold Rush listed on our board over here for $6. It's mainly to let people know that if you order a cocktail here, it's not going to be $9, $10, $12. It's going to be, you know, six. If you order, you know, if you special call top shelf or something, it might be $7 or $8.
Right.
But, you know, that's a, and again, here we have that luxury because we have, our overhead's not like other places that we've opened or other places that other people have opened. We didn't get too carried away. We had a lot of fun, like, decorating the place, building the place out, but we didn't get carried away. We didn't gut the place, you know. We didn't start from the studs again like we do at other places.
Was that challenging to do that? Because you would think that if you started with a theme, you had some continuum you could follow, but this is kind of random. Is that harder?
Yeah, I guess it can be, but I enjoy it. Like, this place pretty much looks like mine and Susie's house. Like, a lot of the stuff came out of it. This is like if I had a basement bar, it would look like this. You know what I mean? And I don't have a basement, though. I only have a cellar. But a lot of the decorations came from our house. I'm a hunter and picker anyway. So a lot of the stuff I've collected over the years that we decorated with. So yeah, maybe it's harder because, like, if you pick your concept and you pick your style of design, it's easy because you have these rules you kind of follow. not easy. It's not easy. None of the places we've opened it, I felt like it's easy because I like really get obsessive about details. but you get my point. Like, it can be easier. And here, you know, you don't want it to feel contrived. You want it to feel comfortable. And you want to nod at, you know, you always want to nod at what you're doing so people have an idea of what they're getting into when they walk in the door. So
it's interesting that you use the word contrived because as we were discussing earlier, I've heard some people say, you know what, so they're taking a cool old bar, they're going to turn it into a hipster place, and, you know, and it's going to be something that is kind of a caricature of a neighborhood bar. Number one, have you heard that? And number two, how do you remain authentic and not become a caricature of?
Well, I think that how you remain authentic is you be authentic, you know. And I haven't heard that, but I did suspect that we might start hearing that once we've been open for a little while. Everybody has to, or not everybody. Some people always have to be a cynic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been in the bar business for 2 decades, and these are the kind of bars I drank in before the cocktail culture got big. Before, you know, all the movement towards doing other things happened. Like, but I've always went and sat at the bar 3 houses down from my house and had a lager and a shot of whiskey.
Why was that? Why is this a kind of a comfort zone for you?
I guess, you know, it's just, like, it's how I grew up, and honestly, like, when I go out with other bartenders when they're in town, like, that's where we end up at the end of the night, kind of. Like, it's either at my kitchen table or at a bar like this, you know. And I also feel like it's not, like, I'm confident that this isn't a contrived style bar because this really is, like, part of us. Like, everybody that's involved in it has had a lot of input in it, obviously, but, like I said earlier, 90% of what we've decorated with came right out of my house. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't go and, like, oh, I'm going to build this bar and it has to look like this because hipsters are going to like it. And, hell, to be honest with you, I hope hipsters love it, whatever that is, you know. But I hope everybody else does, too, you know. Like, my mom's husband has donated some stuff from his basement bar for me to hang because he saw what I was doing here. And he's like, oh, I've got this Budweiser light. I think you'll love it, you know. And now that they live together in, like, a garden home, or if not a garden home, they live together in a home without a basement, so he lost his bar. You know what I mean? So, like, it's really, like, and now people are starting to see what we're doing. They're donating pictures and stuff. We bought a picture of Marguerite, the lady who ran the bar for years. She's behind the bar there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we want to nod at Polly's. We still have Polly's sign up outside, you know.
So donations are welcome. If somebody has something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kitchy.
And you know, and we tried to take what we thought was the best parts of bars and include them in here. And I don't know how you can prove that you're authentic. I don't know if that's possible. But we really do feel like we've put a lot of us into this place.
So with Tyler involved, there's got to be some food.
Yeah, we're doing bar snacks. And down the road, you know, and I know people have written about it, we want to do a food truck. But, that's our version of a soft opening. We just open the doors,
right,
and then we let the place grow a little bit. But right now we're doing, like, your traditional bar snacks. We have a pickled menu list. So it's pickled hot links, pickled pickled sausages, pickled cauliflower, pickled pickles, cucumbers, and pickled eggs. And then we have
a lot of pickling going on.
Yeah, then we have some, it kind of makes sense, you know. And when you order it, you get it in a little mason jar, you know, you get some saltine crackers and a napkin. Bartenders just hand it out to you and it's done. Then we're also doing jerky, so we're doing house-made beef jerky and tofu jerky for the vegetarians. And then the only other thing on our menu is a farmer's country ham sandwich. So it's just sliced farmer's country ham on white bread. And if you want, you can get a Hellman's mayonnaise packet or French's mustard packet. So super simple. We're not trying to draw people in to have dinner, obviously. But if you're here, and we're also, you know, having fun with the old throwbacks to the bars. Like, if you're sitting at the bar, they'll throw you some salted peanuts. And, you know, and Tyler's having some fun with how he's salting the peanuts. And down the road, we want to throw a popcorn machine in, and we'll make our own little seasonings for that. But, you know, like, it's not a restaurant, but, like, I sat here on opening night and had a pint of Guinness and a farmer's country ham sandwich. Tyler, like, tolerates me. Like, I've been going to Morris's Deli eating those same country ham
sandwiches. Oh, yeah, forever. Yeah, the father's country ham. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I really want to have that at the bar. So it's really for me. but hopefully other people enjoy it, too.
And last quick question, what are the hours here?
4 to 4, 7 days a week.
Seven days a week.
We open up, and down the road, once we do bring in a food truck and and we want to do a backyard eventually, probably for next spring. We might extend those hours on Saturday and Sunday. We might open up at 1 or 2 o'clock, but we'll announce that whenever it happens. Just, you know, people like to day drink a little bit more on those days. So
absolutely.
Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
What an interesting place I'm in today. I am at the headquarters, the international headquarters, I guess, of Louisville Vegan Jerky with Stanley Chase. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I've spent the last half hour with you learning about this business, and it just amazes me. This little spot off Papalua Road in Louisville is making this product. It's been sold everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like this building, as you can tell when you pull up, is like it's. You would never expect it. People open up, come in here all the time, like, oh, wow, like it looks like a
it's not a shiny skyscraper.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, it looks terrible on the outside. We're actually trying to fix it up outside a little bit to make it look a little nicer. But this is an industrial parkway.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, even if we looked really good or our building looked really good, the rest, everybody else around here, it's just kind of beat up. But, you know, I kind of like it because, you know, the rent is fair. I mean, way, way better than if we were working closer to the city. And everybody around here owns their business. You know, you're not around a bunch of little chainy spots or, you know, this or that. It's like there's a catering spot a couple doors down. The owners are there every day. There's a welding business right next door. The owners all, you know, so it's nice to be here.
But the cool, I mean, I guess I'm just fascinated having gone through the plant here and looked at the way you make the jerky and hearing the story that just 4 years ago, you were thrilled to sell 100 bags a month.
Right.
And the growth now is what?
Well, yeah. So we're producing over 20,000 bags a month now, and hoping, you know, to grow even bigger. You know, and that even sounds, you know, 20,000 bags. You know, when I see relatives or old friends around, I tell them, and they knew where I was at selling 100 bags a month 4 years ago. And it is a crazy number. But, you know, in the production, the manufacturing world, the snack world, I mean, you never realize how much people eat until you get into this business and how big the world is to try. I mean, we're still not in 25 states, you know. Okay. We're not in chain grocery stores. You know?
I guess I could presume from that statement you're in 25 states.
We're in about 25 states. We're in, you know, give or take 600 plus stores. We just got a store in Switzerland that's carrying us. We got a store in the UK that carries it. We just got a distributor in Canada. So, you know, but there's just so much. We just got contacted by a distributor in Chile.
Wow.
You know, so the world is I always forget how big it is and how much is really going on.
There's a lot of places where people want to have jerky. Now, I saw when we first started, you showed me the original pack. When you first started, you had this marketing concept called What a Jerky.
Right.
Right? What a Jerky. Yes. Which is a cool name, but
it was silly, yeah. I had no intention of building a national brand. It was very silly. I mean, I had, you know, Judas, like from the Bible, on the black pepper, like just I was just like, oh, I was making like putting like, you know, people that are kind of jerks or whatever, known as jerks, and I thought it'd be a funny brand.
I got an idea for you. We can get some Donald Trump stuff.
I know,
would be all
he
over.
He would
your
sue
back.
Me, but yeah, definitely. No,
he
that
likes
was
having his name on stuff.
Right, right. That was kind of the idea though. At first, was to be playful, cartoony, like kind of. You know, I don't know, South Park-y, just, you know, humor brand. But I don't know, I kind of got bored of that real quick. And then, and also, the big picture, I just didn't see people gravitating towards.
Right.
You know, and people, nobody takes vegan food that serious in the first place. So I wanted to create something that was like, you know, had a little bit of a seriousness behind it.
Well, now I'm very interested in your packaging now has a great ode to the city of Louisville because you have some Louisville icons on there. Tell
right.
me how you selected a couple of those.
Well, so I was really interested when I started. I stumbled around Pete Browning, and I started reading his story on Wikipedia. I mean, just online, and was immediately fascinated because I'm a big baseball fan, and I'd never heard of him in my life. And I started talking to people about him. Nobody had heard of him. I mean, people are familiar with Brownings, and the people I think have heard the name before.
They had a restaurant.
Yep, but I mean. you know, still to this day, I mean, I have people that have born and raised here, lived here for 50 years. They don't know who he is, you know, and like, I think it's common. I know people do know who he is, but he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's, you know, his grave at Cave Hill is listed on the map, but you know, other than that, you know, you don't ever hear his name really.
Yeah.
You know,
and that was interesting to me. You have what I don't know how many five or six people that are featured on the bags, and they're all people who are buried at Cave Hill.
And I always tell people, yeah, they're like Louisville legends that have been forgotten. Okay. That's kind of the theme I go with. I did put my mom on a bag for Mother's Day. She's from Louisville, you know, and I wanted to. I'm very, very big into family, and this business is family ran. You know, my brothers both work here too, and we really wanted to do that for her. But sticking with that theme, you know, we've gotten all these different. I do a lot of research trying to find people to put on these bags, and this is our new one coming out. It's called Reuben's Carolina Smoky Carolina Barbecue. This is Reuben Durrett, who he founded the Louisville Public Library.
Wow.
And, you know, has great story. I mean, the guy was a collector. He was a historian. He collected a whole lot of stuff and then gave it all to the city. You know, and it was like, you know, all of his treasures, and he gave it. And, wow. You know, I mean, people don't know that stuff. I didn't know that stuff. I mean, I'm not saying I'm better for knowing that stuff. I'm just like, wow, nobody knows these things. And these are really cool people, and they did a lot. A lot of them did a whole lot for the city. And, you know, back in their day, everybody knew who they were. I mean, they were the movers and shakers, you know, of their time. Todd Browning, who's on our Chipotle, we get horror fans all the time because he directed the first Dracula movie. And wow. Freaks, he did a show called Freaks as well, or a movie called Freaks. So we get, some people know who these people are, but for the most part, you know.
Yeah, so you go from really a 100 bag a week business to literally international snack food.
Yeah.
And it seems like overnight, it's 4 years. But I mean, what is the key to that kind of growth? I mean, how do you keep up?
Well, I started growing the business. I didn't go to business school, but I was, you know, aware of the word scaling, and I knew that most businesses failed when they scale, and that just rang around in my head. I had always heard that, and I watched Shark Tank, which I didn't start watching it until probably a couple of years ago, but. Even before then, I knew that a lot of businesses fail when you try to get big. And I think, you know, that's just kind of in the back of a lot of people's heads whenever they try to, you know, if you're moving into a bigger house or whatever, you want to make sure you're not moving towards something where things are getting out of control. You know, because when you're in a business, even when I had a food truck and wasn't paying myself and, you know, barely making any money at all, I still wanted to have really good-looking utensils to serve, and I still wanted to have good graphics and cool stickers to pass out. You want to have all these things with your company, and a lot of people sink themselves trying to get that, you know, those elements in place before they have a working concept that's selling, you know, sure. To support that kind of stuff. Because, you know, as you grow, you want to, you know, obviously the ROI, the return on investment that most companies focus on that are successful, that is the number one.
Sure.
You know, so if you, that's what I've been focusing on, and we have grown at such a calculated pace. I mean, you know, that's one thing I pride myself on. We've never, you know, I mean, I do take risks. I love taking risks.
Sure.
But I'm telling you, I make people very nervous around me sometimes. But I don't go off impulse. I don't go off intuition all the time. I do try to do everything, you know, very calculated.
Okay, and so if you've gone from like 100 to 20,000 bags in 4 years, and you're so calculated, you know, what's the limit? What's the top end?
We talk about that all the time. I don't know. I mean, when we moved into Brook Street over in Old Louisville, you know, we were like trying to figure that out there. And then we started building pallets in there. And we were in a bakery. You know, we were like, there's no loading dock. There's no, you can't bring a, you know, it's hard to have a pallet jack in there. So that was one thing we were like, well, we can't really build pallets in here. So we got over here and we were like, oh, we'll be here for 100 years. And then 6 months later, we're like, oh, okay, we don't have any more room. We're out of space. Yeah, so we got another location. The good news is I've gotten really tight with my landlords, and they love the business. They're probably the coolest landlords
And you told me you started in a kitchen at the Clifton Center?
Yep. I started in the Clifton Center, and then I also was cooking. We were switching back and forth between where the Post is now in Germantown. Okay. When that was a VFW, I was cooking in that back kitchen too, which was a nightmare.
Let's talk just a little bit. We just got a little time left about the jerky itself and the popularity of the food. I mean, how did you choose it, and is there something special about the way you're making it? Because jerky to me sounds like meat, and then it's vegan.
Yeah, that's it's a disruptive market. I know that word gets thrown around a lot these days, but it is what I'm into, and that's what this company is. Is, you know, it'd be like somebody coming up to you and telling you water or something else. You know, like, it's, everybody knows jerky to be a dried meat, and this is not dried meat, but it looks, it tastes, it feels like dried meat. So, you know, I would say probably 90% of the time we go to a food show or a flea market, and here comes the guy like slapping his overalls, you know, walking up to us like, "What the hell is this?" You know, and you know, we're just like, "Hey man, you gotta try this." You know, we open up a bag and we give it to him, and he's going over and getting all of his friends. I mean, it happens every single time we go out. You know, and you know, I think it's people are their expectations are so low that it's almost hard to not be their expectations. And then I think it's good, and I do believe in the product. It's got a good texture. It really tastes like meat, that people are so surprised they become, immediately they're going around telling all their friends about it, which is this is how we've grown the business, just word of mouth. You know, we don't have a huge budget for marketing or advertising. We do stuff on Facebook, and then people tell their friends, and that's pretty much what it is.
And I understand some famous people like it, and will give you good concert tickets.
Yeah, the Arcade Fire came through town, and we were on the writer. It was awesome. I mean, you know, we all went to the show, and we even felt like probably 10 years too old to be there. But they knew Louisville, and they're from Canada. You know, they knew Louisville vegan jerky, and that like gave me a big confidence boost that I was like, all right, this is, you know, the branding wasn't too selfish that I wanted it to be my city. But you know, yeah, so I was really happy when that happened.
All right, so got to close here. Where can people find your product here in town?
You can get on our website, and we have a store locator. You can find we update that weekly. But locally here, we're in Heine Brothers and Rainbow Blossom. They're the first two places that took us in the entire world. So, we like to promote them a lot. But then, you know, we're getting into Kroger. We're in about 30 Krogers in Kentucky. We're in Whole Foods. We're in Lucky's Market. So we're in about 70 shops in Louisville, and then Lexington, Bowling Green, a couple places like that.
All right. Stanley Chase, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.